prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we discuss underseen horror films, specifically those with fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Lance.
And I'm Erica.
I'm Cody.
That's right, folks. This is my identical twin brother joining us for today's episode.
Hi.
Hi, Cody.
Hi, Lance.
Thanks for joining us.
It's good to be.
It's like old times.
It is. This is the very first episode that I recorded with Lance was also with Cody.
Madhouse.
Yes.
And then we did Born of Fire.
Born of Fire, yes.
That movie was awesome.
It was.
And now Cody's joining Unsung Horrors for the first time ever. I've been wanting to do this for a long time.
It only took him 3 years.
Yeah, I wanted, I mean, obviously I wanted a twin movie and, you know, there's not a, there are, well, especially after we asked in Discord and on Instagram, like favorite twin movies, there are a lot that have under 1,000 views on Letterboxd, but this is No Rules November.
Yes.
So my pick, it has over 1,000 views. So yeah, my very handsome identical twin brother, Cody, right?
That's me.
I wanted him to join us, obviously, because of twins. Jack's Back is my movie from 1988.
100 years ago, there was a series of murders so grisly.
Some theorize that Jack the Ripper was a medical man. I believe that would also apply in this case.
Human mutilations so meticulous.
My brother didn't kill anybody.
That an entire city was paralyzed in fear. Now, 100 years later to the day,
I didn't do it!
The Ripper has returned.
No!
Jack's Back.
Yeah, it's James Spader twinning it, which, yeah.
Is he though?
He's not. There's no
okay,
shit.
There's
a lot of missed opportunities, which I think we'll talk about. And since Cody and I are experts in the being twins.
That's all we know.
It is. I wanted to give our perspective on Rowdy Harrington's Jack's Back, maybe chat about twin portrayals in film, and just offer some insight into what it's like to be, you know, joined at the hip. Not literally, but
Siamese twins freak me out.
Conjoined twins.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to be PC on here now.
I mean, they, yeah.
Not really, actually.
So yeah, Cody and I grew up together. We weren't only roommates. We were woo-mates.
Oh, Christ.
Wow.
Woo-mates. You get
that's
it?
That's a good one.
Yeah. I got that from Jack and Jill, Adam Sandler's movie. Oh, yeah, I'm going to talk about that too. Erica's favorite is Adam Sandler.
I fucking just can't.
But no, we developed our love for a lot of the same things at the exact same moment in life, especially horror movies, slashers in particular, and drawing. I'm going to have Cody pimp his art at the end of the show. He's an amazing artist, everybody. He did our Unsung Horrors logo.
He did.
Oh, I did.
You did.
Remember that?
Yeah.
But no, I mean, we've developed our own personal or personalized taste as we've grown older and we no longer live together. So we have different, you know, ideas on what we watch or what we see. But, you know, there's always moments. I won't say it's like a twin connection, but there's always, or it's like a best friend connection where you watch something and you're like, oh, I need to tell Cody about that. I think he would love it. Because, you know somebody that well.
Yeah.
Sadly, I don't think Jack's Back is one of those things.
I think that's fine.
Yeah, no, it's a good reason to have Cody on the show. Hang out with my brother. Yeah. You could watch us like we're zoo animals, like animals in the zoo. And Erica, sometimes we just start hugging it out.
Yeah.
We're freaks. So yeah, I think I'll go real quick through the cast and crew of Jack's Back, right?
Yeah.
And then we'll dive into discussion and talk about twins.
Yes.
Jack's Back is streaming all over the place, by the way. Tubi, YouTube, Freevee, the Roku channel, our favorite Crackle. What the hell is Crackle?
I don't know.
You brought this up and I
put it in the, I was like, hey folks, if you want to watch it, it's on Crackle. Is anyone watching shit on Crackle?
That's a streaming site?
Yeah. Have you ever heard of it?
Never heard of Crackle.
I mean, I first learned about FUBU. What is it?
FUBO.
FUBO from you. I mean, there's so many that I can't even keep track anymore.
Yeah.
So.
FUBO is basically cable. You pay for it. I just do it during baseball season.
Okay.
So.
It's everywhere. It has a Blu-ray. If you're one of those people that aren't in this room that really loves this movie, then you can own it. You don't love it. I saw the rating.
I don't love it, but I do own it.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I wanted to listen to Rowdy Harrington's commentary.
That makes sense then, yeah.
Wait, you have the Blu-ray?
I have the Blu-ray.
Oh, wow.
Do you want to borrow it?
No, I'm good. Thanks.
If anybody wants to buy it from me, hit me up.
You got to have your Unsung Horror shelf of all
I
the
do
movies.
Have my Unsung yeah. Horror shelf. I love having my collection. I have a few DVDs too. Okay, so in Jack's Back, there's a maniac in Los Angeles recreating every Jack the Ripper murder 100 years to the day. Awesome concept. Raping and mutilating women at night. The police have somehow figured out the Jack the Ripper copycat killings, so they know exactly what night and how the next victim will be murdered, but they have no suspects or clue on how to prevent them from occurring. And a young medical student played by James Spader is murdered when he finds one of the victim's bodies, an old girlfriend of his, one night. And after he's murdered, the police believe he was the Jack the Ripper killer. But twin brother James Spader sees his brother murdered in a dream and enters the picture to find out who killed his brother. Once this happens, the more interesting Jack the Ripper plot kind of dissolves and sits on the shelf for about an hour as the twin brother teams up with the girl who liked the other twin before he was murdered. And it becomes this convoluted, overlong mystery. We'll spoil the ending of who Jack the Ripper copycat killer was once we dive into
the
discussion.
If you don't figure it out pretty quickly, then.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as he pops on, you're like, it's that dude. He looks like
Well, I have Jack thoughts about somebody else, and I'll get into that when we talk about the film. So,
okay, cool. Yeah. Okay, so this is Pittsburgh native writer-director Rowdy Harrington's first film. It was directed in 1988. His given name, I found this out, is Howard Harrington. His mother called him Howdy, and he was on the varsity wrestler. He was a varsity wrestler, and the captain and the team started calling him Rowdy. So Rowdy Harrington is born.
I think all Howards should be nicknamed Rowdy. No, I like that.
I think they should all be called Howdy. I like the Howdy angle.
Mm-hmm. Rowdy Hughes.
Rowdy Hughes.
Like Howard Hughes.
Oh, there you go. okay, so Harrington started off as doing a lot of odd jobs in film. Predominantly, he was a gaffer, the chief lighting technician, early in his film career. For a lot of films like Repo Man and Wes Craven's A Nightmare on Elm Street. So he had a lot of experience on a lot of low budget filmmaking early in his career. But he was always interested in writing, so he wrote scripts while he was a gaffer, which led him to wanting to direct. He's best known for directing Roadhouse after Jack's Back in 1989, which still holds the best line in all of cinema.
Where I used to fuck guys like you in prison?
Yes. I used to fuck guys like you in prison.
It's great.
You know, Pain Don't Hurt's a good one too, but I love that movie. Keith David, Terry Funk, Sam Elliott. It's so good. Harrington then directed and wrote some movies that most people have never heard of. He directed a movie called Gladiator in 1992, starring Cuba Gooding Jr. and James Marshall, or as everyone cool knows him as, James Hurley from Twin Peaks.
Harrington cast the same people multiple times because Spader's in three of his films.
Yeah.
And he's only directed eight.
Yeah. Him and Spader were real close, like super buddy-buddy after Jack's Back. They developed a great relationship. Oh, okay. But Harrington was told if Roadhouse was a hit, he'd be able to make whatever he wanted. And he did that with a movie called Striking Distance in 1993, which he wrote and directed, starring Bruce Willis and Sarah Jessica Parker. I learned that Robert De Niro was originally cast in the Bruce Willis role.
Oh.
Yeah, and he wanted to change up the script. He liked Harrington's script, but he wanted it more darker and dramatic than action, which Harrington was like, Robert De Niro is like the greatest actor ever. I'll do it.
Yeah.
And he rewrote it. The studio apparently hated it because they wanted the humorous action. So De Niro's like, I'm out. Get Mel Gibson. Mel Gibson apparently wasn't available, so they got Bruce Willis. And in an interview, I read that Harrington was like, I'll be as nice as possible, but Willis is not a nice guy. I did not like him at all. Apparently, he found out about the script that De Niro helped, you know, kind of rewrite, and he wanted to make that movie. But Harrington's like, no, the studio wants this. So he was an asshole to work with the whole shoot. Mm-hmm. So Bruce Willis, don't be an asshole.
We can't really say mean things about Bruce Willis now. He's got like severe dementia.
I mean, well, that movie was in 93. I think that he was...
He was with it.
Yeah, I know. But I just feel like, this is coming from someone with no soul. Like, I feel bad, like, you know, shaming Bruce Willis for his behavior.
Bruce Willis, I will never forgive you for how you treated Rowdy. But have a good rest of your life. Okay. Yeah, let me go through a few more of his films because I watched this one. This is a film that I'm personally considering his masterpiece. Okay, it was apparently his first script he ever wrote after moving to Hollywood in 1978. And the script was initially called Bestseller, but it never sold. And he kind of rewrote it as decades went on, and he changed it to A Murder of Crows, which is the title of the film from 1998, with Cuba Gooding Jr. starring and the catcher from Major League, Tom Berenger. Eric Stoltz also stars in it. Ashley Lawrence, who is very horny in this. Oh. She has pierced nipples.
Oh.
Yes. There is a jump scare that's handled in a way I had never seen before. It's a sex scene jump scare.
Does a crow fly in?
Yeah, and starts participating. It's a three-way. No, it shows like an empty bed. Like it's a slow camera pan and there's an empty bed. And then it kind of stops. And then just out of nowhere, it's Cuba Gooding Jr. and Ashley Lawrence. And they're naked, completely butt-ass naked, bare-ass naked. And they just jump out from behind like the scene and they start fucking against the wall.
Oh, that's a jump scare.
Yeah, I was like, holy shit.
So you recommend this movie?
No, I do. This is his masterpiece.
Oh, it's a hump scare.
A hump scare. Oh my God, that's perfect.
I just coined it.
Yeah, I'm going to put that in my letterbox review real quick. Okay, and then he directed a few more films, two with James Spader, like you said, one called The Stick Up in 2002 and Eyewitness in 2003, which also starred Jeff Daniels and Leslie Stephenson, who is James Spader's partner. They met on the set.
Oh.
Like I said, Harrington kept talking about how him and James Spader are really close. He thinks he's the second best actor in the business. When asked who the best actor in the business is, he says, I have no idea, but there's always one better.
Oh, I thought he was going to say Robert De Niro.
I know. That's exactly when I was talking about it. I was like, it has to be De Niro. But they quickly bonded. So yeah, Rowdy Harrington didn't direct a lot of movies, just eight. But Sam from BNS About Movies interviewed him back in 2019 in this four-part interview that I recommend anybody who's interested in learning more about Harrington's career and personal life.
Yeah, we'll put a link to that in show notes for folks.
It's great. Yeah. And shout out to Sam for, you know, sending that to me and us on Discord. And then I also listened to the audio commentary on the Shout Factory Blu-ray. So I'm going to be pulling a lot of like little anecdotes and information from Sam's interview as well as the commentary after this. But definitely check out that bnsaboutmovies.com. And the one thing else I wanted to talk about Rowdy Harrington is he did recently release a novel in 2020 called Father Christmas. And I don't know how everybody feels about Spotify. I don't mind it. I know it dicks over all the artists, but they recently added audiobooks.
Oh,
and Rowdy Harrington reads his own audiobook, so I'm going to check that out. It revolves around Christmas, so I might try and fit it in this holiday season. I'm down with Spotify having audiobooks. They have Mark Lanegan's Sing Backwards and Weep memoir, too.
Wow.
That he reads, so check that out.
Oh, I need to read or listen to that one.
It counts as reading.
Yeah,
it does.
No, I'm just kidding. It does not.
It does.
No, listening to an audiobook does not count as reading it.
I mean, the information still, you're consuming and absorbing.
You've consumed the text, but you have not read it.
Is it like listening to a song?
You're not reading the song.
Well, you just said you're not reading the audiobook.
Right.
It's the same as reading.
You're listening.
Okay.
To both.
It's like reading.
Okay, fine.
I think you could log it on, what is it called? Goodreads?
Yeah.
After you listen to an audiobook. That's just me.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm only going to go through a few of the cast members real quick. First, we have James Spader.
Yes.
Very sexy, very feathered hair, very 80s James Spader, playing the identical twins, John Allen and Richard Westford. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of young kids have no idea that he's the voice of Ultron in the Avengers Age of Ultron Marvel movie.
Oh, I forgot about that.
So that's him.
I mean, I know him most as being Dennis Weaver's son in Cocaine.
Yes. That's one of my favorite roles. It's one of his earliest roles, too.
He's completely unremarkable in it. because he's just like the worried son about his dad who's hooked on cocaine. Because it's Dennis. Oh my God, it's the Dennis Weaver show, and 100%. But James Spader's in it, and so that's the movie now that I think of him the most. But like, he's had plenty of movies over the years. Like, he's not technically part of the Brat Pack. He's sort of peripheral Brat Pack. But like, he's in so many movies. Like, I think he plays the absolute perfect asshole in Pretty in Pink.
Yeah, he's got the look. He's got the whole demeanor down. Yeah, I mean, I think you see that a little bit in Jack's back too.
You do. I mean, he's got that for sure. And it's sort of a novelty for him to play both the good and the bad. I didn't really believe him as the good twin in this one. I was like, okay, when do we get into evil twin territory here? Because that's the James Spader that I think everyone knows.
Yeah, but I mean, my personal favorites are David Cronenberg's Crash,
yeah,
obviously, and the controlling lawyer boss and secretary.
Yeah, I like that one too. I don't know why, but I'm like every time, and it's probably because Kurt Russell's in it. But I'll watch Stargate anytime it's on. Yeah. Like, well, that back in the cable days, whenever that was on, I would always watch that movie. That and Shawshank Redemption were the two movies that, like, oh, I've seen this 20 fucking times. I'll watch it again. Stargate.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched a lot of Spader, but looking at his filmography, there are some I want to check out. One called Tough Turf from 1985 that looks kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
This one called A Killer in the Family from 1983, which is apparently based on a true story. About three young kids, one played by Spader. Eric Stoltz is another brother, but they break their murderous father out of a prison and they go on a crazy crime spree, and Robert Mitchum plays the dad.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's made for TV, but it sounds really interesting.
I can actually see, that's good casting, because I can see Spader being related to Mitchum.
Yeah. Another thing, I mean, James Spader reminds me, speaking of twins, of the London brothers. The guys, Jeremy, and what's the other one's name?
Jason
London.
Okay.
From like Dazed and Confused. Yeah, yeah. I think they look kind of alike. They look like a young Spader to me.
Same eyes, I think so. Yeah.
Never thought that. Yeah. But
I didn't either until I started looking up twins, and then they popped up, and I was like, I saw a picture. I was like, that looks like James Spader.
There's this other movie that Spader is in. It's mid-2010s. Tommy Lee Jones is in it, and he directed it as well. It's like this Western sort of, called The Homesman. And I only bring it up because a baby gets chucked into an outhousehold. Oh. So.
Is it in your book?
Yeah.
Nice. Do you have any favorite Spader roles, Cody?
I mean, I think Pretty in Pink is probably the one that I just know the best of Spader. But, other than Jack's Back, no. I mean, he's just got that intense stare, you know, that he's just always looking into your soul, making you uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's intense, but it's also dreamy. Do you guys find James Spader attractive?
I mean, he's very like 80s dreamy.
Yeah. Because he's on, what's his show called? Hit List or something? Blacklist?
Black Hat's
a movie. Yeah, I think it's called Blacklist. I've never watched it, but he's not very attractive in that show.
No, he's older James Spader, not hot.
That's like him now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks the same.
He's fine looking, but it's not. I don't know. 80s James Spader, like he just has that, like, Pretty in Pink is peak Spader, I think.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
As far as like, he's just the perfect preppy asshole in that. And it's not attractive to me, but I can see the appeal to most.
I think he was a teen heartthrob for the girls back then.
I guess.
He's probably in those magazines. Okay, a few more cast members. Cynthia Gibb plays Christina, or Chris, the doctor who works with the twin Spader that is murdered and then, you know, starts hanging out with bad boy Spader. She looks a little like Emma Watson to me in this, the actress from Harry Potter.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm really
you're reaching
in the dark here.
Yeah.
Okay, but really, she's not a very recognizable actor to me. She co-starred in Death Warrant with JCVD. She was in Short Circuit 2. She starred in Youngblood from 1986 with Rob Lowe and Patrick Swayze. This movie sounds interesting. Modern Girls in 1986. She co-starred along with Virginia Madsen and Daphne Zuniga. It seems to be kind of like a cult movie of sorts. And then there's one I want to check out, the Karen Carpenter story, where she plays Karen Carpenter. It's a made-for-TV movie. I mean, I think Karen Carpenter's great. Tragic life, so I want to check that out. And then lastly, Erica, for some reason, you went down some rabbit hole of Chris Mulkey movies.
Yes.
Who plays a cop in Jack's Black.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Jack's Black a lot.
I probably will too, yeah.
It's awesome. And he has so many acting credits, yeah. But it seems like a strange actor to zero in on for this episode.
Well, see, here's insight into my process for when we do things like this, especially when it's your pick. And I'm like, I'm kind of like more free to watch what I want in prep for the episode. Whereas like when it's your own pick, you have to like, okay, I got to focus on the director and the main actor. And that. I saw Chris Mulkey on here and I looked at his filmography and I found a bunch of movies that I thought looked really interesting. And I was like, fuck yeah, I'm going to deep dive on Chris Mulkey. There's one that I've seen from before this, though, that I did want to bring up because Laird programmed this for Weird Wednesday last year, called The Silencer from 1992. And this is sort of like a erotic thriller, La Femme Nikita-esque knockoff.
Okay.
I'm going to read Laird's review, though, because, you know, no one says it better than Laird on Letterboxd. So good. The Silencer, 1992. A deeply strange film that I could believe would be in the Criterion Collection if Olivier Assayas had directed it and not Amy Goldstein. It hits the checkpoints of both an assassin drama and a skeezy DTV erotic thriller, but it enters them in sideways with this weird 10th victim video game framing and Chris Mulkey providing color commentary throughout. It never really commits to being either of those types of movies, skimming along as something wholly different and vaguely artsy in its oddness. The silencers don't even seem to work, or at least the sound design doesn't, having the typical silence gunshot effect. And imagine a James Bond type hero suddenly making out with a hot person met in a pool hall, but then calling off the whole affair because there was no condom. Gotta wear the glove if you want to get the love.
Nice.
So this was a perfect Weird Wednesday movie. I'd recommend it with like a group of friends for movie night, not a solo view or anything like that. But then some new watches for Chris Mulkey for me. First one was Twist of Fate, a.k.a. Psychopath from 1998. This is a Twin Peaks reunion with Madchen Amek. I can never say her name right.
Yeah, she's the best. Shelley Johnson.
So she plays a lawyer in it. It is lawyer Dwyer. And this is my review that Dwyer is literally the worst lawyer ever. And she could have done a better job if she just watched some Law and Order. Sam Watterson seasons. Just got to distinguish that.
Nice.
I watched Rainbow Drive starring Peter Weller, which is an average cop thriller, but it has a banging Tangerine Dream score.
Oh, nice.
Like, and it's on YouTube. After I watched the movie and I was typing up notes, I just like went on YouTube and I played it and I was just like, fuck yeah, it's good. And then there's one other one I watched that I'm actually going to talk about more in our end of year best of new to me episode, and that's called Patty Rocks from 1988. So folks are gonna have to wait to listen to that episode to hear me talk about that movie.
And Chris Mulkey is in it
and he shows his penis twice.
Yeah. Mulkey pee-pee.
I'm very anxious to hear about his penis.
I'm just gonna basically intro the film and just talk about Mulkey's penis. I'm not even gonna talk about the film.
Yeah, there's another Mulkey movie that might have been a Weird Wednesday called Ghost in the Machine.
Yeah, I was going to watch that too.
I watched it years ago and people rave about it. And I did not click at all for me.
Okay.
Very slow. I know him. Obviously, he's very amazing in The Hidden with Kyle MacLachlan, Dale Cooper. But I know Chris Mulkey. First time I was introduced to him was watching the Twin Peaks series as Hank Jennings. Yeah. So
he's been in like everything.
Yeah,
I know his I think the Letterboxd has him like just in like under 200 credits, but like with his television and stuff, I think he's closer to like 300 on IMDb.
Yeah,
with TV movies and stuff and series. And that's all I'm talking about for the cast.
I mean, I made a quick note of Robert Picardo in there.
He is the guy that he's the Dick Miller guy that pops up.
He is like, he's just a character actor. He's in so many of my favorite 80s movies, like The Burbs, LA Story, which only people from LA understand why that movie's funny. Get Crazy, Star 80, which is really great. Total Recall. Like, I mean, just he's in so much.
Yeah. Other than Spader, him and Mulkey are the only two that I recognize.
Like, yeah.
Right off the bat. I'm like,
But yeah, I mean, I tried watching one new one with Picardo. It was a movie because I did Frame Up 2 during Junesploitation with John Saxon. And so I was like, oh, I should watch the original because that has Wings Hauser and Robert Picardo. Mm-hmm. And I didn't finish it. I started it yesterday and I was bored and I kept looking at my phone and I was like, I'll come back to this. And then I didn't finish it. So
yeah,
I'll report back on that later, but it probably won't be anything noteworthy.
Make Picardo your most watched actor next year.
Next year. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. The Burbs is, that's my favorite Joe Dante. It's so good.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's it for cast and crew.
We can talk about Twins now.
Yeah. So Cody, I have a question for you.
Okay.
If I were murdered and you had the vision of me being murdered and you saw a face that you knew or you thought and knew that it was a killer, would you play detective and avenge my death and find out who it was?
Absolutely.
Really?
Well, yeah.
Well, Lance sounds like he wouldn't.
You'd stop what you're doing and devote all your time to this?
Well, I would. I don't think I would like.
I mean, it's not like Cody's working at a shoe store. So, I mean.
Well, obviously that helps solve the case.
If I had a vision of somebody, you know, that I thought murdered you, I would definitely investigate. I would just probably go online and start like looking around. I mean, I wouldn't know how, but
I wouldn't either. And I started thinking, I mean, I was Googling too, you know, what happens when one identical twin dies, you know, like there's a lot of stories out there obviously about twin telepathy and sharing pain and stuff. But I Googled, when one identical twin dies. And you know how sometimes when you Google something, there's like a first immediate answer that's just on the top of the page of the old internets. And this was a very disturbing like blurb that popped up. So here it is. Twins literally do not know how to exist as one. When a twin dies, the twinless twin longs to reconnect. The twinless twin may have phantom pain or feel half dead. He or she may have a need to represent both him or herself and the deceased twin, or may even take on behaviors of the deceased twin. I feel like that last sentence could be like the cool start of a movie script or something. Mm. But basically it's saying like twins are fucking worthless on their own. Like that first line.
I wonder if that was written by a twin. I'm guessing that they probably just interviewed twins that had, you know, their identical twin pass.
Yeah,
but that's very depressing and sad to think about.
Well, so I looked up, I was like, okay, they keep calling it twinless twin. So I Googled twinless twin, which is a real term for a person whose twin has died. It's twinless twin or lone twin. Again, this is pulled from the old internets. Twinless twins around the world unite through organizations and online groups to share support and the status as a twinless twin. And there are famous twinless twins out there, some notable twins, other than James Spader and Jack Spack.
Oh.
Linda Hamilton, her twin sister died in 2020 at age of 63.
Interesting.
Sad. She is a twinless twin, so she is going through a special grief. Science fiction author Philip K. Dick, his twin sister died weeks after birth.
Well, so he doesn't really like know then.
I mean,
and that's not monozygotic.
That's monozygotic siblings.
Yeah.
That's identical twins. I didn't know. These are all identical twins. Obviously, Elvis Presley had a twin brother who died stillborn. Right. So
I actually didn't know that.
You didn't?
No.
He talked about it quite a bit.
I don't watch a lot of Elvis stuff.
So obviously he had a connection with his technically born, but unborn twin that you people will never understand.
Okay.
And then Liberace was a twinless twin.
Oh, okay.
He had the desire to, quote, live for two. And I almost feel like he made that up.
Oh, yeah.
twinless twins is a very real thing. And yeah, I think I would look for your killer if you were murdered, Cody.
I hope so. You sounded a little surprised when I was going to do it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it seems like, I mean, as much work as like James Spader goes through this, obviously, he works at a shoe store in this, the bad brother. So I guess he can miss work, but it seems like he would need to devote a lot of time. And it can ruin a relationship. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like if I want to look for your killer, I'm going 100% in and I'm not caring about anything else.
I'll help.
Oh, we could do podcast about it. Cody, get murdered. This has to happen.
Would you go to would you go to the police and say, hey, I had this vision?
That's a good question.
You know, I mean, what would the police do?
Well, after Jack's back, I probably would not, because they would think that I murdered you.
But then you could do the whole process. I mean, you could use the
film. I'd be like, hypnotize me.
Yeah.
Hypnotize me. That was my favorite scene, by the way, the hypnotization.
Oh, his acting was great in that, getting strangled and stuff.
Yeah, Browning Harrington said when he was strangled during like a practice take, he was telling the prop guy to like, pull harder, pull harder. And he really blacked out being choked.
Oh, wow. Yikes.
So that's James Spader.
You brought up the like his death and his twins seeing it in the nightmare.
Yes.
Like that and only one other element are really the only twin ties. And that's when he's being questioned and he mentions like when they were kids that they gave the same answers on a test. So mm-hmm. that's pretty much the extent of the twinning that's happening in this film. Mm-hmm. Has anything like that ever happened to you guys? Same answers on tests? You knew something had happened to the other like twin pains, anything?
I've never experienced that.
No, we used to, we were talking about this, you know, like we have an older brother mm-hmm. and like a lot of his friends would come over and, you know, we all hung out, but they would try to like
do little experiments on us.
I'm sorry, it's not funny.
We were strapped down. they like drilled holes into my head.
No, they would separate us,
yeah.
You know, and they would be like, you know, draw a picture or say a word or stuff like that
yeah.
and see if it matched up. And then they, you know, the first time it happened, you know, obviously there's no successful things because it was just kind of like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah. Well, all my answers were all a dick.
But then like after it happened, we got together and we're like, all right, if they do this again.
Yeah.
You know,
these are our answers.
Let's do a house and let's like, we kind of had these things, but never really panned out. But yeah, we never had like some weird connection.
Like shared pain experiences or, yeah.
Other than just having kind of the same, like we laugh at the same things and the same kind of sense of humor. And
that's annoying.
Yeah.
But no, I think non-twin siblings have that connection too. Like if you're, especially if you're close in age,
sure, yeah.
But there is a connection, like, you know, being with each other, your first half of your life or a quarter of your life for like ever, like it's mm-hmm. like every day of the fucking, I remember I didn't care so much, but you used to get angry if we had classes together in high school. Cause we had some honor courses together.
Let me adjust my glasses for this conversation.
And then we both loved art. So we had art together, mm-hmm. but Cody would get a little angry and I wouldn't care so much. And I don't know if that was a competition thing or.
I mean, I think probably, I mean, I don't really even think about that now, but probably in high school, it was more like a, let's be separate.
Yeah.
Let's
create our own. I wanted to latch on and be like, let's walk in with our hands together, holding hands and arms around your shoulders. My buddy and me like to climb up a tree. So twins and horror. So Erica, do you consider twins to be creepy? Like, are they, do you think they're, do you have questions? Like, I mean, do you think twins are terrifying? What?
I think in the context of like how they're used in the film, you know, because I think some of the most like creepy twins to me aren't even real twins. It's like one person playing two people. Like mm-hmm. Dead Ringers is just like,
right,
you know, peak twin creep movie.
I think that's my favorite twins movie.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure.
And it's one of my favorite Cronenberg movies too.
Same.
So. Not real, like the Shining twins, like, yeah, you know, sure. Like when I was a kid, like that creeped me out. But as an adult, I'm like, they just creep me out because they're children. And I'd.
Well, ugh. They weren't twins in the book, in the novel.
Right.
Kubrick made that happen.
So, I mean, I don't have a problem with twins. Twins are okay, I guess, you know.
Are twins
She's
creepy?
Only saying that because we're right.
I know. Like, you know, we'll pounce on you and kill
right,
you.
Right. Yeah, I know. It's two against one. I'm trying to be as nice as I possibly can right now. But I think here's what does creep me out about twins is not the twins themselves, but the parents who dress their twins in identical outfits.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
That's fucking weird.
You can
creepy.
Mix up your kids.
Yeah.
Like, you never know. Like, I know when we were born, I think I think it was me. They painted our toenail. They painted one of my toenails.
Like, okay.
Just to make sure, like, okay, that's Lance. They never dressed us up alike. They always got like the same shirts, but one would be red, one would be blue.
Yeah.
And the stripe across would be blue or red.
Yeah. My nephews are twins. They're going to be 18 this next year.
And they still dress the same.
No. I don't remember my sister ever dressing them in similar outfits, except maybe for pictures.
Yeah.
And I don't remember how she was able to distinguish the two of them. I still don't know which is
which. There's been photos of where we are wearing the same stuff.
Like as kids? Like really
young kids. But even like, I guess even up to like some elementary school pictures, I'll look at some photos of me and Lance and I won't know which one I am.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That does happen. Like, I'll have to ask our mom. And sometimes I feel like she's just guessing. Like, that's Cody. Look at the nose. I'm like, that looks like my nose. Like, okay.
So that's a weird feeling as somebody to look at photos. I mean, when we're younger, there's a certain point where you do just, okay, I know which one I am. But when you're looking at a photo, you're in, I don't know. Is that me?
Oh, wow. That's like a mini existential crisis right there. I love it.
See a picture of Cody like in the backyard doing something. I'm like, I don't remember ever doing that. Like losing my mind as a kid. Yeah. I think what makes, I mean, like you said, in horror movies or like thrillers or just films in general, people do play into like, you know, the twin element being kind of creepy or makes you think about twins in general. Like I watched Mark of Cain for Horror Gives Back.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's insinuating that identical twins are exactly alike. You just can't tell them apart ever, even if you've been married to one for 20 years. And Mark of Cain, this lady's married to her husband and his twin brother escapes from an insane asylum, kidnaps the brother and starts living as him with his wife. And the wife's like, what do you want for breakfast, honey? And it's the twin. So I can understand why that would scare people.
Yeah.
Maybe your husband or your wife or your partner has a twin out there, and who you fell in love with is not the person you fell in love with.
Yeah, I think. I mean, not so much for like horror movies. I mean, obviously, like Blood Rage is an easy go to. You know, we covered Scalpel on the podcast, and that's like one person playing multiple roles, and so I think what's more important when it comes to twins and horror movies or thriller movies, if we're going horror adjacent, is the opportunities for deception that can be presented. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what falls short for me in Jack's Back, is that we basically just have two separate movies, essentially, like two different characters, and there's no real, like, we didn't do anything with the twin thing. Like, they didn't need to be twins. Like, the fact that he saw his brother's death in a vision is like the main thing. Like that's the only reason they needed to be twins. But like it could have easily been some other way that he found out who his brother's killer was. Did they need to be twins? I don't think so.
Yeah, they did. Okay. I think that was it's the most interesting part of the movie.
Yeah. But
yeah, I see what you're saying. It's a story that can easily be told without the twin element.
Yeah.
Like they could have just been brothers and he had that vision as well.
Yeah.
Or like they could have been lovers or something.
I think the Jack the Ripper element is the most interesting part of it. And they didn't do as much with that that they could have. So that to me is like the big missed opportunity there. And they threw the twins in as like, well, we need something else to make this interesting. Yeah. And
so, I feel like it's too much. It feels to me like Harrington had like a stack of script ideas. And one of the movie was called Jack's Back, about Jack the Ripper.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had a script called I Saw My Brother's Killer. And then like another one called like Hot City Lights or something, about a doctor falling in love with some bad boy. And he just like mixed them all together and made this movie. But when I watched A Murder of Crows, very similar. Halfway through the movie, it just shifts focus and another mystery is introduced.
Oh,
it's his writing style, which I both like and dislike. I read a bunch of interviews and listened to his commentary, and he did talk about the inspiration for Jack's Back. He said he listened to a radio program on NPR about twins, two men from Pittsburgh, his hometown. One was on death row and one was a successful physician. And he thought those characters were kind of inspiring, you know, about like how they took their different paths in life.
Mm-hmm.
And then he read about how twins have known the exact circumstances and time of death of their siblings. And he thought, that's really interesting for a murder mystery. So he started writing based on that, but he wanted a serial killer element mixed in somehow. And as he was researching serial killers, it was in 1987, and he saw that the Jack the Ripper committed all the crimes in 1988. So he was like, oh, it's 100 years to the date. Boom, no brainer. And he wrote the script. To me, it sounds like he's a writer at heart, jotting down these pulpy novel ideas.
Yeah.
And he just throws them all together, which, like I said, I really like. But at the same time, I'm like, yeah, I wanted more of the Jack the Ripper stuff, which is just kind of left on the shelf for an hour. He claims that the original script of Jack's back was more convoluted than the movie turned out.
Oh,
so I don't know.
For fuck's sake.
Wow.
No idea. But yeah, the twin reveal in the movie, I think, is genius. I think it's handled amazingly well, where the introduction of Rick, the twin brother, it's such a misdirection because you think it's John waking up from
right.
a dream.
Yeah.
So James Spader as John is murdered. James Spader as Rick immediately wakes up at the end of that scene. So as a viewer, you're like, whoa, what a crazy dream.
Right.
And then, yeah, it's the movie it's a complete misdirection. A different movie starts.
Yeah.
Then it's him trying to find the killer. Kind of a psycho type thing where the lead character, more or less, it's the same actor, but the lead character's killed like about 35 minutes into the movie.
It feels like, though, that moment of him waking up is how a really good short story would start. Like that first 30 minutes is the most interesting part of the movie. It's moving. Like we're trying to figure out what this Jack the Ripper killer is. Like this one girl gets fucking gutted after an abortion. Like it's moving. It's great. And then it hits the biggest reveal of the film. And then from there, we're just dragging our heels and puttering around until we get to the final resolution. And yeah. So that's, to me, it's very disjointed to me in that sense.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I do like the stereotype, you know, the bad twin. How do you usually differentiate twins in movies? A scar or a ponytail or an earring or tattoo.
Well, he's got both. He's got a scar and an earring.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And he has a shirt off too. And he has a little tattoo. But you
and he sells shoes.
That's and bad he sells shoes. Boy stuff right there. And he goes to porn shops to buy guns. Yeah. So talking about other twins in film. So I know we reached out in Discord
mm-hmm.
and on Instagram.
Yeah.
Cody, are there favorite twins in film that you can think of that you know offhand? Like, what are your favorite movies involving twins?
I mean, Dead Ringers is probably the best. I mean, just, it's a great movie. Blood Rage. I mean, these are ones we've already mentioned. I did bring up one called Dude Massacre. Dude Bro Massacre Party Part 3, which is ridiculous. And it's kind of this, it's the same premise in the sense that a twin brother is murdered and then the brother comes to the same city that his brother was murdered in, trying to find who murdered the brother. But it's like Troma with like South Park feel, like it's bonkers. Is my favorite word to use. It's so out there, but that's a fun one. Yeah, I mean, there's
I've never seen that one. I need to.
I recommend it. If you want to just like shut your brain off and just like, you know what you're getting into right when you start watching it and you're like, if you don't feel the energy of what's presented to you right at the get-go, like shut it off.
Right.
But you have to be in like the headspace to watch a movie like that for sure. Yeah. Like those are the ones that really pop. Oh, April Fool's Day. Great movie.
Oh yeah.
Craig brought that one up. That was his answer on the Discord on Instagram. He asked, does April Fool's Day count? And yeah. I don't think I've actually ever seen April Fool's Day. Has it just been spoiled for me now?
Twins? Well, kind of. But okay. I mean, it is kind of, that is like the reveal.
Okay.
But it's still such a great movie. It's worth watching, even if you were to know.
Okay.
You know? But that's when I watch every April 1st.
Okay.
It's with Muffy St. Clair is her name.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there are a lot of movies involving twins that I had never even heard of. Like my watch list now, if I want to get through my twinography, I need to start watching these. I Can't Stand Pickles and Discord mentioned Deadly Twins, which you watched.
Yeah, yeah, the twin sisters.
The Lounge Sisters.
The Landers twins, yeah. They're lounge singers and they get gang raped. And
wait, they both get raped?
Yeah.
At the same.
Well, no, wait. yeah, they both get gang raped, but one sister is having the worst fucking day. Cause okay, one Lander's sister, she gets raped. She loses a baby that she was very excited about having. So
damn, that's funny. Said, yeah.
No.
Give her a minute.
The next thing is funny. So she's in the hospital and she's like, oh my God, I love my baby. She opens the hospital window and jumps out to kill herself. I'm not laughing at suicide. I'm sorry. It's not a funny topic. But the fact is she lives and she's now in a wheelchair. She's having the worst day.
Oh my gosh. Whoa.
I mean, it's not great. It's another one of those twin movies that it's entertaining trash to watch, but they really didn't take advantage of, you know, having twins. Like they put one in a wheelchair and the other one teams up with a dude and they're trying to like track down like the guys who did this to them. When it's like, no, it should be two fucking twins on a rape revenge, like rampage, like going for it.
When you have real twins
acting,
you know, fucking utilize that.
Yeah.
It's rare.
They just put one in a wheelchair. No
barbarians
fun.
Too. Yeah.
The Barbarian Brothers. Yeah. Fuck yeah. I watched one called Twin Falls, Idaho, which was about, it stars the Polish brothers. They're Michael and Mark. They were also the Cenobite twins and Bloodlines. They're actors.
Okay.
You have something to say.
So one of the twin movies that I watched was called Almost Dead from 1994. It had like the terrible trope of twins. Like there's like the Shannon Doherty is in it and she's like peak Brenda, like 90s bitchy 90210.
Nice.
She's a doctor in it.
She could and be a she's, doctor.
No.
Just a bitchy doctor.
She's wearing like the, you know, short skirt, long jacket, 90s doctor coat with like, you know, her legs all the way up to here. But anyway, so she's conducting the study on twins. And so at her clinic or whatever, all the twins are walking around and they're all wearing the same outfit. It's that dumbass trope. But like those twins, the Bloodline twins show up in it. And I like lost my mind when I saw them.
Yeah.
Because like, I low key love Bloodline. Not low key. I love that movie. Fuck
it's
up.
Great.
Yeah.
It's probably I won't say it's the best sequel. That would go
it's the third best.
Hellbound.
Second best.
Yeah.
Yes, third best in the series, second best sequel. But I saw them, they showed up and I was like, oh, Bloodline.
Well, they're great. They're a writer director combo. Like they directed, I think Michael directed this Twin Falls, Idaho. They have numerous films together. This was the only one I watched because they starred in it as conjoined twins, which isn't something that you see a lot of, like twins playing conjoined twins. Like right. I had never really heard that. And the effects, the first like 35 minutes of it, I was really sold. It's very weird. The characters don't make sense. You know, I keep mentioning, but like a Twin Peaks type of film, like, or feeling. But then it becomes like this over emotional drama that becomes almost unbearable. This love story.
Yeah.
It's not like Greg Kinnear and Matt Damon playing conjoined twins or anything. But
and then we
got Rye One mentioned the simultaneously talking cowgirl twins in Night Dreams from 1981, which I had never heard of.
I don't think I have either.
There's one called Hell Roller, again with conjoined twins. I'm going to check that one out because I noticed Mary Warnoff was on that, the cast sheet. So, MP, as Matt mentioned, The Creature with the Blue Hand with Klaus Kinski playing dual roles, which has to be fucking badass.
Yeah. We had someone on Instagram suggest that one too, is Left Hand Path. Nice. And sorry, but Matt, you kind of spoiled one of my picks for next year. But yeah, that was the one I mentioned during Horror Gives Back of a German crimi that I was like, oh, it's got twins and Klaus Kinski. And so it's on my list potentially for next year. It depends there's a certain guest that I want for that one. So we'll see.
Is it Cody?
It's not Cody.
I mean, we're talking about conjoined twins. You have to mention Basket Case too.
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know,
Jim mentioned House of Yes, where Parker Posey partakes in some twincest with her brother.
That went to the top of my watch list. I'm like, you got incest in there and they're twins? Bring it.
Isn't that like some weird comedy drama? Like, I've never seen House of Yes, but I remember the poster being kind of...
I've seen it, but I don't remember because I think it was like on and I was occupied with just like something else, but I vaguely remember it.
She sleeps with her twin? Or do they just make out? Or
I think that there's like sexual
Yes.
activity.
Yes. Adam watched Robert Mulligan's The Other from For Horror Gives Back, and he recommends that one.
Yeah, that one's in the book.
Yeah. I watched, like I said, Jack and Jill. I know you love Adam Sandler, Erica. This movie is terrible, but I'd be lying if I said I wasn't fully entertained and laughing most of the time. Al Pacino plays himself in the movie, and he's in love with Jill, played by Adam Sandler. So he's trying to like court her the whole movie. Oh, it's gosh, as amazing as it fucking sounds. No. I watched a movie called Chained for Life from 1952. It's like an old exploitation film starring the Hilton twins, Violet and Daisy Hilton. They're the real life conjoined twins that are in Todd Browning's Freaks.
Oh, okay.
From the 30s. So this is about 20 years after Freaks came out, and they're older. And it's kind of the semi autobiographical story, how they got into entertainment, how they married men for as publicity stunts. Mm-hmm. But the plot was what really interests me. It's about one of the sisters gets married and the other is convicted of murder, killing her husband. So the courts are trying to figure out, how do we punish the murderer and her sister together? So it's a very interesting, it's fun. I liked it. A lot of people kind of gave it low ratings, but I gave it 3. And this led me to watch the documentary on the sisters called Bound by Flesh, which I recommend, even though it's not very well made, but it's well researched. The whole story up until their tragic death. They were left abandoned in town by a tour manager. They were playing a double feature of Chained for Life and Freaks. Mm-hmm. That's kind of, you know, that was their whole life, was entertainment. But their tour manager just left them in the middle of this town with no money, nothing to their name. So they became cashiers and lived in the town until their death.
Oh, wow.
And one sister, they had made a pact, which is also kind of mentioned. I feel like Twin Falls, Idaho copies a lot of the Hilton sister story. They made a pact that if one dies, the other is going to go with her. So one of the sisters dies of the flu. And then like days later, the other sister died when she didn't call for help or anything. Mm. Very sad story, but I recommend it. It's a great, great story. We have the creepy ginger twins in Children of the Corn 4, The Gathering. Ugh. Are twins creepier than gingers? Are ginger twins the creepiest of them all?
Yeah, I would say.
For this pick, I was going to go with The Devil's Wedding Night because it's a twin movie. Right. I like it way more than Jack's Back. stars Rosalba Neri and Mark Damon as the twins. But my last No Rules November was Lady Frankenstein. And you can never overdo it with Neri, but I wanted to switch it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of twins. Of course, there are the other greats. Dead Ringer, Betty Davis. Mm-hmm. Good Night, Mommy. Probably some of the creepiest sets of twins. And then De Palma's Sister with Margot Kidder. Hammer's Twins of Evil. Twins starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito. Good stuff.
We had some other answers on Instagram. So Cinemondo Cult Films said The Sheriff's Strange Son, 1986, which is a Mexican Western horror movie, and I'd never heard of it. And then we had two people who gave this answer. Helela and Francisco, or Riverside Cinema Galore, said A Zed and Two Knots for their twin movies.
Yeah, see, I've never heard like most of these movies.
I know, yeah. I said, you know, specifically we asked, like, tell us your underseen or favorite. And so I think a lot of people opted for underseen because they know, like, our bread and butter. So,
right.
I know we're talking movies, but when we're talking, you know, like the evil twin thing, I always think of Bart and Hugo from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
But film-wise, when it comes to actual twins in a film together, besides, and I didn't even know their names, like Hellraiser Bloodline twins, you know, yeah. I like squeed when they popped up in that dumb Shannen Doherty movie. It's not dumb. It was great trash. There's Mario and Fernando Almada, who are in a ton of like low budget Mexican action films from like the 70s and 80s. They're in like Rene Cardona Jr. films. I just watched one called Under Siege, aka Hostages, from 1980. It's in the latest Cardona set that Vinegar Syndrome put out. The unfortunate thing is that, you know, I'll go to like either Mario or Fernando Almeida's like Letterboxd filmography and start like looking for films and like go through them one by one and like look them up on YouTube or Archive or wherever. Mm-hmm. And they're either, and I'll even look them up on, you know, Legal Adjacent. They're either nowhere, or if you can find them, they don't have English subs. So I feel like there needs to, you know, and maybe I'm spoiling like a Blu-ray wish list for not right. next year because we already recorded that, but like the next one would be like, give me an Almeida Brothers box set. Like, because there's some great stuff. There's a guy, I don't know his actual name, but he runs a website called Trash Mex, and he reviews.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Armando. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. He reviews all of these films, like he's seen them. And so obviously he speaks Spanish because he can, I think he does translations from, because he works a lot with another guy who runs an Instagram called See It on 16 Millimeter. And they do screenings all the time out in LA. I know our listener Francisco goes to them often.
Yeah.
And they've screened a few of these films. And I'm like, damn it, I wish I could see that.
Yeah, he's brought some stuff to Texas, but I think the closest I've seen is like maybe Dallas or Houston. I want them to come to Austin.
There's a few that are on my list that are like these low budget Mexican action films that I'm like, I would drive to Dallas to go see some of these movies. But so the Almeida brothers, the McNamara twins from Canada, the twin dragon encounter. It's just pure vanity projects, like silly, like all the like kung fu. They're like karate chopping all the villains and they do it in slow motion. They're bad. It's like Red Letter Media, best of the worst type nice. Type of movie. But other ones that haven't been mentioned yet. Oh, you mentioned De Palma's Sisters already.
I saw that at a Terror Tuesday, 35mm print. Yeah, good stuff.
See, Cody mentioned Basket Case. I can't say enough good things about Jeremy Irons in Dead Ringers. Mm-hmm. There's a Mexican film called The Other or La Otra from 1946, directed by Roberto Galvadon. It's kind of similar to Dead Ringer with Betty Davis because it's one poor twin and one rich twin and the other one takes the other's place kind of thing. It's a Christmas movie, so it'd be a good watch for December. I feel like I watched that on YouTube when I did. It was a while back. But Nick Cage as Charlie and Donald Kaufman in Adaptation.
Yeah.
Great film.
Yeah. Not a horror movie, but I think it's a great performance by him. Those are all mine. But there is one, just to bring it full circle, especially given that Cody is here, Madhouse.
Madhouse does have the twins.
Yeah, that's right. Twins.
That's right.
That's why I got you guys in the first place for that show.
I thought you just wanted to just on. Like,
I mean, it turned into friendship. That's fine. But I initially was like, you guys are here for the novelty. This is a twin movie.
That's why Cody's here today. I mean, I'm not going to lie.
That's it. Anytime twins happens.
Yeah. So, I mean, most of those movies have the dual roles together on screen. They share screen time. And that's why I do think, coming back to Jack's Bag, it's a missed opportunity to have two spaders spadering it out together, trying to outspader each other.
Yes.
I I think the twin reveal is the best part of the movie. It's really cool. But it seems like a missed opportunity for Harrington to not include maybe even in a flashback scene or something.
Something, yeah.
I do like Spader's performance in there. Like I've talked about, I think he is better. I never think of him as a great actor, but when I think about like when we talked about Cocaine or, just some of his older movies, like he's always good. He's a good actor.
Yeah.
So respect there. Yeah. Do you guys have, just to wrap up Jack's Back, what are some favorite moments from Jack's Back that you haven't already talked about?
I like the fight scenes. He throws like a high punch. There's like a real,
it's terrible.
And then at the end, when he's fighting the big guy,
Jack.
Yeah. Jack. Exactly. Yeah. Like the stunt double is amazing in that. I mean, it's so not Spader through the whole thing. It's funny, but I like stuff like that.
Erica.
I think two was like the reveal of,
you like the last hour of the movie.
No.
That was your favorite.
No. The reveal of who the killer is, like when he looks over and like behind the curtain, he sees the shoes and then he looks up and it's Socrates. And like, everyone got that, right?
Socrates,
okay,
yeah.
Making sure everyone got that.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, just the look on his face, like when it pans up to him, like, and I was like,
I'm evil.
And I was like, okay, we knew it was you. But to be fair to the movie, for a minute, I did think it was the psychiatrist, Robert Picardo's character, because of the whole hypnotism thing. I was like, oh, so maybe he hypnotized the guy to like help him with all of this or to make him do it,
right,
or something like that. But then it just turned out that he's just being like a weird kind of shady psychiatrist.
Yeah. Like the second hypnotism session at his house where he's grabbing the gun too. It's almost like, okay, does he think Spader's the killer? Is he the killer and he's going to kill Spader? Like, there's a lot of that in the whole movie.
Yeah, especially because the first hypnotizing session, when it starts, it cuts away. And I was like, oh, see, they're not going to show it because then we'll see that he's actually hypnotizing him to make him forget that he saw anything.
That's
and he's trying to cover his tracks. So like it did throw me off for a second, but like the second Socrates showed up and is like, you know, sex work bad. I was like, okay, this guy.
Yeah. I have to point out the music too. I thought the music was very perfectly fit for a 1980s thriller. Yeah. There's one, you know, obviously you have sexy saxophone in all these movies, but the way Harrington places this is amazing because it's when Spader as Rick goes to his brother's apartment, who's dead, and he's looking at his books. And that's when the sexy saxophone starts playing. You know, I'm an older guy now, and that's what libraries do to me. Like, I don't care about sex scenes. I'm like, yeah, zoom in on those books. What is he reading? But yeah, in an interview, it was interesting. The movie was originally titled Red Rain because Harrington really wanted to use the Peter Gabriel song that was out there called Red Rain. Okay. He wanted to use it in the opening and closing credit scene. Instead, you get this very 80s song that they wrote originally for the movie. Due to budgetary reasons, this was a very low budget movie. They made it for $1 million, 25 days to shoot. Harrington said he was used to that type of, you know, movie making. But he's like, obviously, we couldn't get the rights. It cost a lot of money to get a Peter Gabriel song. So we wrote an original song called Red Harvest. And that's that terrible 80s song that you hear during the credits. One of my favorite scenes, though, I mean, it's not a favorite scene, but one of my favorite effects is in the very beginning when, you know, it's the cold open of one of the ladies getting murdered. And then the credits start and it's a white screen and it's slowly, it's a Polaroid that's developing the victim's body because the killer takes photos of the victims. Or I don't know if it's, I think maybe it was from the cops, but I really like how it just slowly starts coming out into development. Okay. So yeah, the doctor, Socrates. I mean, of course you kind of know that it's going to be the doctor. There are, you know, Harrington does kind of play with it. He said he didn't, he wish he didn't make him so obviously evil looking. I mean, the actor's name is Rod Loomis, and he seems like he's a Loomis. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cody, you thought he looked like a character from like an old Hammer film, right?
Yeah. When I first saw him, he just, I don't know what, if even like a specific character in a Hammer film, but I just felt like he should be in a Hammer horror film.
Yeah. I could see, he looks like an old British, like, horror villain. Yeah. Like, I could totally see that. He's probably best known as Sigmund Freud in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah. Oh, wait, he's not Socrates.
He's Sigmund Freud.
Oh, damn it.
I thought you meant like he physically, like he looked like with the beard and everything.
No, I honestly thought he was Socrates in Bill and Ted. God damn it. You're right. He was Sigmund Freud.
I thought it was a thing. He kind of looks like he could have been.
I know. Well, like I appreciate you guys playing along for the wrong reason. But,
well,
you know.
you noticed the delayed laughter on that joke. That's why you asked.
Yeah, I was like, eh?
God damn it. And he was also King Zed in Beastmaster.
That's right.
The movie that aired on HBO the most in the 80s, Don Cascarelli's HBO joke is he said that HBO means, hey, Beastmaster's on.
Yeah.
Okay, so would you guys recommend this to friends, family, enemies, loved ones? What would you recommend this movie?
I mean, I would if people like, you know, Spader. If someone's like, hey, do you know any good James Spader movies? This one probably, but probably not. I probably wouldn't recommend it to anybody.
Unless they're a twin or something.
Yeah, it would have to be a specific thing, but I'm not going to be going around saying I saw it. Jack's back. You guys need to see this immediately. You know, it's entertaining, but I'm not going to watch it again.
I'd give it a soft recommendation. You know, like it's got enough novelty in it that I enjoyed it. I think it's just now that you know, you've talked a little bit about Harrington's writing style, like that makes sense. Like that's just how he constructs stories. And I think that's just not like the type of movie that I want to watch, but I can see how not even just for like twin completists, but like, this is a nice slice of, you know, this era and those types of thrillers that were coming out at the time. And it has some moments that I definitely did, you know, that I did enjoy. I was never bored watching it. So, and that's always a good sign, but I didn't love it. So, I mean, it's a soft recommendation from me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think people go, it's not going to satisfy people that are looking for a horror movie at all.
No.
If it's an 80s thriller, I think it does the job fine. I liked it more than disliked it. I did a rewatch of it, and it played out much better. Like I said, it gets a little convoluted and stuff, and I kind of knew beforehand who the characters were, and I enjoyed it more the second time.
Okay.
So if you did want to watch it again, Cody, you could have the Blu-ray. I did read a great review, though, from film critic Odie Henderson, that he did a review of this, of Jack's Back. And he ends his article with, "Jack's Back maintains a giddy storyteller's glee from beginning to end, painting itself into corner after corner, only to escape every time. It works because of its stubborn belief in all aspects of the pulpy yarn it spins. There's real charm in its compulsive desire to tie its preposterous loose ends, no matter how complicated the knots become. That's my story," the film seems to defiantly say, and I'm sticking to it. And with that outlook, I was like, yeah, it's like, it's almost, I don't know. It's kind of like, Harrington's just kind of like playing with the viewer most of the time, you know, throwing out these ridiculous like mysteries and just extra characters and these situations these characters get in. And having watched A Murder of Crows, I was like, yeah, that fits Harrington's work. Okay, so double features.
Yeah.
Cody, you're our guest. What is your double feature with Jack's Back?
I guess I'd pair it with the one that I mentioned earlier, the Dude Bro Party Massacre Part 3, just because I think it's just at the complete opposite end of the spectrum, but it's still kind of a, who killed my twin brother? I need to figure it out. You know, so it's a... You could see it as a palate cleanser, or it could be worse than Jack's Back for some people, for sure. For sure. But I think it's just so different, but it still kind of has that same, you know, storyline in the sense that it's, that would be a fun evening of two movies.
I like it. Erica, what about you?
So this is another movie that Laird programmed for Weird Wednesday. I'm not going to read his review this time, though. I'm going to read John's review. John went to this with me. I'm going to surprise a lot of people with this one that I'm recommending this, but I think this is a film that has something in common with Jack's Back, that if I tell you that I'm picking it for this movie because of the twin aspect, that's kind of a spoiler, but knowing that about the film will not damper your viewing of it. But I do implore people to watch this either with one other person, preferably with a group or a crowd, though. So if you see your theater has programmed this film, please go see it or put it on for like a group movie night. I Know Who Killed Me from 2007, starring Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, I've never seen that one, but I've heard the terrible things about it.
Yes, all the terrible things you have read about it are absolutely true, but it is a film that you absolutely must see and you will have fun watching it. So John's review of this, he said, "I don't know if it was intentional or not, but this flick's got music ripped right from the Mask of Red Death soundtrack to add another layer to the color insanity going on here. The whole movie is like, it's either red or it's blue, like that the whole movie. Cool. So that makes more sense once you've seen it, like the ripping of Mask of Red Death. I don't know if that's intentional, because that's giving a lot of credit to the filmmakers here. But his description of it is, if shitty era Argento made a thriller for a pop culture icon trying to make a bridge for CW viewers to enjoy late night premium channel thriller fare, this would be it."
Damn.
Yeah, John like pretty much nailed this movie. So I Know Who Killed Me.
You sold me, John.
It's streaming on some things, but again, this should be a group watch with folks.
Nice.
What about you, Lance?
I'm going with Disconnected from 1984, directed by Gorman Bouchard. There's a lot of interesting similarities to Jack's Back. It's about twin sisters, and there's a serial killer out there murdering women and leaving their bodies around town. And one of the twins is murdered. And the other twin sister and police find and kill her murderer. But it's not the serial killer that's been killing all these women that the police think it is. So there are a lot of twists, very similar to Jack's Back. There's a lot of moments where you're watching and you're like, oh, come on. You know, this isn't good. This isn't, there's too much of this. But it's very amateur DIY, absolutely no budget. Gets chaotic. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense in scenes, which I really fell in love with. A lot of people seem to a lot of people, I mean, it's kind of split with people on Letterboxd that I follow. Hate it, love it. I'm on the side of really loving it. I actually enjoyed it more than Jack's Back. Great soundtrack. It's only 80 minutes long too, oh, okay. So that never hurts. Yeah. But it's on Tubi right now. This is one that Vinegar Syndrome released on Blu-ray a couple of years ago. But I think it paired well. Disconnected, 1984.
Nice.
Cody, my love, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Can you tell people, like I said, Cody's an amazing artist. We grew up drawing together. He surpassed me, so I stepped away and handed off the drawing crown to Cody. Where can people find you, follow you, see your face? I know you do some streaming.
I stream on Twitch. And yeah, just like I post my art on social media sites and stuff like that. Yeah. And I have a few album covers coming out through some distributors.
Yeah, Cody does the artwork for a lot of the Shutter Joe Bob VHS releases. Who releases those?
It's Ship to Shore.
Ship to Shore.
Yeah, so I've done 9 of their 10 covers so far, and that's always a fun gig. But nice. they do video game soundtracks too, and those are going to be coming out very soon. The ones that I've been working on, at least. So nice. I'm excited about that.
So you're at Cody Scheibe, most social media stuff. We'll put all his links in show notes so you can follow him.
Yeah. You've got some Christmas prints in your store for
Christmas
sale.
Christmas prints, right? Yeah. I have a convention this coming weekend, but I don't know if that's going to be helpful.
Actually, because this will be out on Wednesday. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. Well, then, yeah, it's at the Palmer Event Center, downtown Austin. Well, I guess that's not downtown. That's pretty south.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have this conversation if that's central Austin. I consider it central, but yeah. it's across the river, so people say south.
Well, it's horror for the holidays, and I'm going to have some holiday treats for everybody.
Nice. Yeah, a lot of vendors. If anybody's in Texas, drive. If you're out of Texas, book those plane tickets. I've gone a couple of years, I think, just to see all the vendors.
And yeah, this is their first year. They're having guests, too. They're bringing some of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre guests and Michael Hargrove from Candyman remake.
Oh, cool.
This is the first time they're doing it, so it'll be an interesting to see. It's usually just artists and vendors.
Yeah, Cody's art's amazing. The Unsung Horrors logo is, I mean, the best there is.
Lance is a great artist, too. Just, you know, don't forget that, guys.
Yeah.
There is a link to his Lance's shop show notes as well.
Be sure to use discount code Unsung Horrors, all one word, all caps. You get a huge discount. Okay. Thanks, Cody, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks. I'm looking forward to the next twins get together.
Yeah.
In 3 more years.
Yeah. So, yeah, our next episode is the best of.
Well, yeah. So next episode is going to be whenever I feel like dropping it in December sometime.
Yeah.
We're recording that tonight, actually, with Lindsay from Schlockenaw and Anthony of the now retired Cult Movies podcast. So we're going to be sharing our best new to me watches from this year, 2023. We'll each have 5 picks. We'll share some of our Letterboxd stats as we always do. And then we're taking December off and we'll be back the beginning of January with our Blu-ray wishlist episode. Yeah. And then after that, we've got Giallo January kicking off. I can share my pick now in case people want to get a head start on watching.
Let's do it.
So for Giallo January, my pick is The Skin Under the Claws from 1975. This is directed by Alessandro Santini. It's on YouTube. I actually uploaded this one myself because it fell off the internet. And I was like, no, I must have this movie. We must watch it. So like most Giallo, there's women being murdered. They're being raped. The victims all have decomposed flesh under their nails. Mm. Meanwhile, Gordon Mitchell,
yeah,
Dr. or Professor Helmet, he's working on a secret to eternal life by doing human to baboon brain transplants.
Oh, shit.
As you do. It is very stupid. It is very slow at times. Some folks are going to hate me for this pick, but God damn it, I think it's worth talking about. So we're doing The Skin Under the Claws from 1975.
Sounds amazing.
It is. If you're not already, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at Unsung Horrors. I'm on Letterboxd, Instagram, and Twitter at Hex Massacre.
I'm on Letterboxd and Instagram at El Shibe.
Be sure to check out all the links to all the good things Cody is doing. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
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 We were rich once. Did I just want to get along. I just want to get along. I just want to get along. I just want to get along.